We can break this through. And thank you so much for all your leadership in this.
Thank you, Evan, and thanks for helping me get the word out.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful one.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. We've been speaking with Dr. Catherine Albrecht. Website, www.spychips.com. Also, We the People, WTPRN.com for her radio show daily from 7 to 9 a.m. And so, all good stuff out there. All right, folks. Stay tuned. Coming up on the second hour. Stay tuned for the second hour of Radio Alchemy on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. Welcome back to the second hour of Radio Alchemy on KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. Hello, loves, and thank you again for hanging out late here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. So tonight, you heard in our first hour about being able to track us, RFID, chipping technology, etc., something of an evolving technology. Well, there are some weapons that have been, let's say, in the black territory that maybe are making the light of day. And some of the discussions about some of these high-energy devices is coming up in regards to September 11th, 911. There are questions, even more questions, about the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings. There was a great discussion, of course, about Dr. Stephen Jones and his looking at thermite, other folks talking about the explosives in the buildings. But now, in the second hour, I would like to introduce to you Dr. Judy Wood. Her website is that, drjudywood.com. And she has been around the scene talking about something quite different, talking about some black budget technology that might have been coming into use here in September 11 to be able to create the effect of these pulverized buildings. You just see these buildings just absolutely turn to dust, and it's a new discussion, upping the ante when it comes to us trying to get to the bottom of the truth of what happened on September 11th. And there seems to be some fur flying around in the 911 circuit, and there absolutely shouldn't be. All theories, everything needs to be on the table. This isn't about ego; it is about truth, and so we really want to make sure that everybody gets their airing when it comes to us understanding what's possibly being used by our government against us and in whatever manner possible. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Wood. She has degrees in civil engineering and applied physics and materials engineering science from Virginia Polytech Institute. She is the assistant professor up till 2006 of the mechanical engineering department at Clemson University. She has helped start and co-founded the Society for Experimental Mechanics, Biological Systems, and Materials Division, and currently serves on the SEM Composite Materials Technical Division. She has a great amount of expertise and is using that expertise. Obviously, something touched her about this event. It touched us all, but she has taken what she knows and applied it, really applied the science to bring out truth. Dr. Wood, thank you so much for joining us here on Radio Alchemy.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, yes, absolutely. Now, I started coming across your materials a while back and finally was able to get you here because it seems that there has been quite amount of discussion and conflicting theories about what happened to the World Trade Center bombings 1 and 2. The current emphasis out there that our radio listeners have heard a great deal about is Dr. Stephen Jones and his thermite discussion, along with the idea of micro nukes. When you sat that day and watched those buildings fall for yourself, maybe those questions and that investigation didn't come up for you, but what came up for you when you saw those buildings fall?
What I looked at did not make sense. And I assumed it was another War of the Worlds broadcast, and they're playing a trick on us through video instead of just audio, instead of just radio.
Yes.
So I called my mother, who lives near the Pentagon, and I decided that was a way of testing my idea. If she could see airplanes flying overhead, then I might be likely to believe it.
Right.
She looked out and didn't see any fighter jets overhead.
Hmm.
You know, near the Pentagon's supposedly been attacked, and there's no fighter jets, so maybe my idea that it was a hoax was correct.
Hmm.
And I think how you're introduced to new information really has an impact. My mother then questioned the events of 9/11 from the beginning.
Yes.
And, the building looked like it was a sweater that unraveled, and that's not how buildings collapse.
I was just amazed at every part of those buildings being pulverized into dust, into toxic dust.
What's really fascinating when you start looking at the evidence, and that's mainly what I do, is just look at it. I don't come up with theories. Just physically see what is happening. You'll see some really bizarre things. Like you have pieces of steel. The outer wall is built of sets of three columns, three stories tall, and all those prefab sets were put together. I call each set wheat checks because they look like wheat checks.
Right.
And here they are flying through the air, and they never hit the ground. They're melting like ice cream through the air.
Wow.
And they turn to dust before you have an impact. At the ground level, you didn't have impacts of the stuff going whop, you know, down into the street.
Yes. Yes, I mean, it was really amazing to see, and so it's fantastic, of course, to speak to you about this. Now, like I said before, there are theories about what brought down the buildings. Why do you think Dr. Stephen Jones's theories about thermite maybe do not live up to the responsibility of being able to bring down the buildings in this kind of manner? Or is that what he's saying? Is he just saying that thermite was there, which means that there was explosives? Or do you think that he's actually saying that that is what helped create the heat enough to melt these columns?
Well, first of all, I don't really focus on what other people do. I focus on the evidence, what I see.
Oh, of course.
And that's what's really been useful here. Because, first of all, everyone is told, what do you see on the TV? Here's what you're supposed to see.
Right.
And now we're told from some other person that this is this other story. Well, let's just look at the data and see what we see. And I started tabulating all sorts of different phenomena that I'd seen, and I came up with a new vocabulary. People, you know, criticize me for that, but it's much more scientific than making assumptions. You see, you know, this hazy air, people call it smoke.
Right.
But then they immediately are thinking of fire.
Right.
Well, let's call it fumes.
Okay.
Something's coming up from somewhere. It's fumes. We don't know if it's a chemical fume or if it's a temperature fume or what it is. And so you start assigning new names, like the wheat checks flying through the air are dissolving before they hit the ground. It looks like an Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Hmm.
Or a shaving cream squirting out of a can.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've given various names, then there's fuzzy blobs and fuzz balls, and I've defined each one of those as I go. And that has helped me to look at the various characteristics. Now, one thing I've become known for, like early on, was toasted cars.
Hmm.
It's not from temperature, necessarily. It's toasted as in its history. It's toast. The street got toasted. This is toast. It's been totaled.
Hmm.
These vehicles, there's at least 1,400 of them that they could count when the day was done.
Were toasted.
They had to be removed and taken care of.
Hmm.
There's, I'm sure, other ones that weren't even countable to remove. They're just powder.
Very good. Well, then let's go back and go back to square one and talk about how you started out. You're like you're saying, you built your own vocabulary around this. Where did you start your investigation?
Well, back at the day one in the faculty conference room, people were watching this TV set and were mesmerized by it, and I was like, you know, this is silly, you know, this is a joke playing Play-Doh, ha-ha, you know, didn't quite laugh, but I looked around for the same kind of eye contact, and people were just traumatized. They couldn't think. They couldn't function. And then pretty soon, you realize you can't talk to anybody about it. They'll think that you're, you know, unpatriotic and, you know, something's wrong with you.
Right.
And there's this deep social pressure to not talk about it. Well, I had a fairly new position. I'm worried about keeping my position. I'm going to keep my face on the straight and narrow and hope that the grown-ups take care of it. You know, that surely somebody else noticed that something ain't right. And we were also told that about the 2000 presidential selection, I call it.
Yes.
And, well, don't worry about getting it right this time. We'll fix it by the next election. So when 2004 came around and we had a repeat, except with more states, I realized that nobody else was going to fix it. And as a citizen of this country, I swear to uphold the Constitution and to defend this country against all evil, foreign and domestic.
Yes.
I don't know what it is, but something is not right, and I need to look into it. And it was 1:30 in the morning on the 3rd of November when the numbers flipped. I realized I need to look into 9/11 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I began looking at it. On 9/11, to test my sanity of what I was seeing, I came up with this billiard ball analogy. So in 2004, I actually started writing it out. I posted on some forum in the spring of 2005, showing that just as a timing device, we don't have enough time for the building to hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't hit the ground in that amount of time. It didn't come down in 10 seconds. It snowed down, you know, dust over some large area over a long period of time.
Yes.
But I went through these calculations, and I was wondering, why can't anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
And started looking at it from the simple standpoint, looking at evidence and looking around and seeing what's happened. The biggest key is to not follow preconditions, pre-ideas, biases about what you think will happen.
Yes, absolutely.
And, for example, I think you said earlier about, you know, the heat or the temperatures. We'd heard about noise, about, you know, melted metal and whatever. I see no evidence of it. And to the contrary, I see evidence that contradicts that makes it impossible.
So when you looked at the buildings, I know that they talked about a great amount of heat because somebody has theorized that micro nukes were in the basement. You kind of get that from the testimony of William Rodriguez and molten iron that was still hot at the very base of the structure.
You know, he said, she said, who said, what said, hearsay.
Yes, yes.
I'm looking at what I see.
Right. And you didn't see the any kind of hot afterburn at the base of the buildings.
We see paper.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of unburned paper.
Mm-hmm.
Paper burns fairly easily when you throw it in the fireplace.
Yes, it does.
And so why isn't it hot? And we also saw those famous pictures in on the cover of, you know, news magazines. This guy running down the street with the cloud chasing him.
Yes.
And he's got his, you know, jaw open, looks panicked. I've got several of these pictures on different streets. I call it the cloud chase scene. And after the cloud passed, we didn't see piles of burned bodies. I come to think that there's no piles of burned bodies anywhere at any time.
Hmm.
Then, you know, there's other stories of, like, steel-toed boots melting on the pile.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is it called a pile? It's ground level. but steel-toed boots melting, we didn't have any reports whatsoever of the feet inside the boots being burned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you get the steel to melt without burning the feet inside?
And how is it that this huge cloud comes down? And, yeah, we did see afterwards, we saw pictures of people walking with this fine dust all over them. And
right.
They weren't burnt by it.
Right. It's like it just snowed. And there were reports that the dust cloud was slightly cooler than ambient temperature when they first felt it. It wasn't, you know, a warm cloud. It was slightly cooler. Various folks have reported that. So I just take in these statements. Now, what people say, I don't hold quite as strongly as what I see evidence of from many different directions because I'm not saying these people are lying one bit.
No, people
have questions, and as soon as they are given answers, they quit asking questions.
Right.
And they believe in those answers.
Right.
And they repeat them as though it's true.
Right.
And pretty soon they don't remember what they really experienced and what they were told they experienced, especially when it's a traumatic event, because to remember it means you're reliving it, and nobody wants to relive that.
And so your first insight was the lack of heat. And what does that mean, because of the talk of the fire, right?
Fire, happening way up on the 70th or 80th floor or whatever. By the time it gets to the street, you know, can you throw a burning piece of paper out a window and have it land on the ground and keep burning? You know, it's going to put itself out. Nothing else is on fire.
Right.
So the fires, plus we didn't see a whole lot of fire happening before the towers went poof. And I say go poof because that's my term for it. It turned into dust. It went poof. But you see cars a distance away that are burning, but there's a sea of paper between the building and those cars. And come to think of it, you don't see metal down in there in the streets. You just see paper.
Hmm.
Where'd the building go?
Right,
gee,
right.
Come to think of it, why hasn't anybody else asked that question?
Right.
Where'd the building go?
Right, right.
It's gone, and it's at ground level. There's a picture that I got on the FEMA site of a gal. It's dated, it was entered into the system, so it was taken no later than that date, the 13th of September, 2001, where she's standing kind of on the east side of the complex, and you look straight through the complex over to the west side at ground level, at eye level. No obstruction to your view, straight across from Church Street over to West Street. And come to think of it, you look down, and she's standing on what used to be the plaza that was concrete, and now it's covered with dirt.
Hmm.
Dirt? How'd that dirt get there? And then you notice these neat piles of dirt all over the place.
Hmm.
And that was peculiar. Another thing I noticed that really jumped out is about a block north of the towers. The wind was blowing slightly to the south, so we're upwind. The clouds, as you saw, they roll out, this big bunch of clouds, they roll out and they slow down to a standstill, then they rise up, and then, you know, the prevailing winds are pulling it southward. So the air clears out fairly quickly, and you have a blue sky.
Hmm.
There's some burning cars, whatever they're doing, smoke coming out of cars, or whatever it is, black stuff,
right.
And you got paper around, and people have just come out of their hiding places. You got this blue sky, so all the dust has settled out, and then you notice really fine, fine powder coming up around the people's feet.
Hmm.
But wait a minute. That fine of dust could not have settled out of the air in 10 minutes.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, no kidding. With all the running and everything going around, right.
That tells me that coarse dust settled out and then became fine dust.
And the creation of, well, let me ask you something real quick. I'm at your website at drjudywood.com. You have a really great photo gallery right on the front page, and there is a picture of what people would say, and you're calling them Cheetos or orange rust, and it is a picture of a huge crane hand kind of clamp picking up, which people would, with a knee-jerk reaction, say is molten iron. And you're questioning this photo and how people, like you said, looking for answers and stop asking questions as to if that's molten metal, why is it not melting that crane jaw?
This is a fun one. If you click on that picture, you're taken to the Dirt 4 page.
Okay.
And if you look down, I got a picture of the Cheeto bag. I call it Cheetos because in the bottom left-hand corner of that picture, you see this bent piece of, I don't know what it is, but it's glowing. It looks like a Cheeto.
Right.
Okay, that jaw is holding, I generically call these diggers, the earth-moving equipment.
Right.
What it's got in this jaw is glowing.
Yes.
It's solid. It's not liquid. If it's not liquid, you know, stuff isn't melted. Okay. It may be deteriorating for other reasons. But if it was really hot, as I say in the caption, we have fire pokers for adjusting the the wood in the fireplace.
Right.
And you can't handle one very long without getting a glove on your hand.
Correct.
Because of thermal conductivity up the arm of that poker, and it would start heating up the handle. So we need insulation around that. Now, if you look in the, I guess it's figure three,
yes.
A more full picture of this jaw, you see the hydraulic arm, the control arm for that,
right.
for the jaws.
Yes.
Open there. How far is that from that extreme heat? That's going to be affected by that heat. But, another question about this, if this is really hot glowing metal, it has to be over 1,000 degrees centigrade to be glowing like that. Why are they picking it up? Where are they taking it? To the dumpster? What are they going to do with it?
Right. What are they? Yeah, what is that?
But if you look right below that, I have charts from a mechanical engineering handbook talking about maximum operating temperatures of hydraulics. This is a piece of hydraulic equipment. And if you look at the bottom, it talks about, you know, different oils and the maximum. The bottom chart of the chart, it labels temperatures in degrees centigrade.
Right.
Pretty much all the curves end at 100. That's boiling temperature. That's 212 Fahrenheit or 100 centigrade. You can't really operate above that.
And what is molten metal operating at?
Well, 212 Fahrenheit is equivalent to about 27, 2800, jump tracks there. Steel melts at about 2750, 2800 degrees Fahrenheit.
On the lines, Dr. Judy Wood. Website is drjudywood.com. We are talking about her alternative look at what happened to the buildings on September 11th, contrary to the evidence presented by others in the 911 Truth movement. And it's fascinating now to look after this very easy little examination. You guys go to drwood.com, go down to her second row of pictures. It's called Molecular Disassociation from Dust to Dirt. There you'll see a big crane jaw holding on to what has been used and shown as molten metal hanging on to this jaw. And at first point, without a scientific background, you might say, oh, well, there's evidence, micro nukes, et cetera, et cetera. But then after sitting and listening to Dr. Wood, it's like, hello. Why isn't that jaw conducting that heat and becoming hot red? How can that hydraulic exposed beam not be failing when it can only survive up to, and you were saying, what, 100 degrees?
100 centigrade or 212 Fahrenheit.
Right.
That's maximum, but they actually state, I think 82 degrees centigrade is or 180 degrees Fahrenheit is the maximum before permanently ruining the equipment.
Dr. Judy Wood is on with us in the second hour. We are talking about the alternative look at the September 11th attacks, what happened to those buildings. She has something that is quite new, quite revolutionary, and we need to hear it. So this is KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Stay tuned. Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
And remember, darlings, to go to www.kpfk.org. There you'll find lots of great like-minded programmers there. Or maybe not like-minded, but that means there's something to learn and something to share, okay, as we try and get all of our perspectives closer to truth instead of, you know, opinion. And so go to there and go over to programs, find Roy of Hollywood, Something's Happening Program Guide. Skip on down. Wednesday night, Thursday morning, there is Radio Alchemy there for you. All right, darlings, we'll be back with Dr. Judy Wood in just a moment. Stay tuned. You ready? the lines, Dr. Judy Wood. DrJudyWood.com is her website, and it is packed full of information. Hello. She set out to tell the truth as she saw it from her scientific background, looking at exactly what she saw there. And this and what she has come up with is pretty mind-blowing, pretty amazing. I just saw something right here and looking at this molten metal scenario. Lots to learn by opening up our minds to every possibility out there. There shouldn't be any kind of infighting, et cetera, in our big tent politics. Everything needs to be heard and on the table. And we're having a hearing here tonight with Dr. Wood. And so now that is just a great clarification that you gave me right now, right here, around that molten metal. That is absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, no, assumed molten metal.
Yes, assumed. You're absolutely right. Yeah, because you, like you said, if it was molten, then it would be liquid.
Correct. And if it really were that hot, the piece of machinery wouldn't still be working. And why would somebody want to pick up something like that and ruin their equipment?
And so what is it? What do you think it is?
This is where it gets interesting. At first, I didn't know, and I haven't messed with this page since then. Notice the caption on it says, "But is this photo really what it seems?"
Yes.
And I didn't know if the photo was fake or if there's a process we didn't understand. But it's not what it seems. There's something more to it.
Yes.
And I continued collecting more, and I love what you said before this last break, that we're not talking about opinions. We're talking about evidence.
Right.
And as long as we talk about evidence, this is great. We learn more and we see more, and if otherwise, it's the blind leading the blind.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's so much more to see. Like, if you want to continue more with that heat issue, the afternoon of 9/11, a water main broke on West Street, and it turned into a swimming pool. We didn't see steam coming out of it. It was like a lake. It was ankle deep, you know, not quite up to knees probably. You could see it halfway up car tires.
Mm-hmm.
A big swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they got it drained and under control. We didn't have a steam explosion.
Mm-hmm.
When it rained, we didn't have a steam explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when it rained, the white stuff you see, the fuming, actually was cut down some.
Mm-hmm.
In the dry weather, you get more fuming. So there's something with the fuming. And the fuming went on for months and months, and do you know it's still continuing on?
The fuming is still going on.
Yes. It's much less, of course. Now, this dirt that I was mentioning, and I end up calling it the dirt series.
Yes.
Got a lot of stuff about dirt because I realized this dirt was getting trucked in and trucked out, trucked in and trucked out. Why was that? Well, if you think about it, right on the afternoon of 9/11, there were street cleaners scrubbing the streets. In the way of emergency vehicles, mind you, it was so important to clean the streets.
Hmm.
And they cleaned them, they scrubbed them, they put stuff on, they constantly kept watering them down. Okay, they want to keep the dust down. But the streets were fuming. I mentioned about how we get this powder that started rising.
Right.
The first I noticed was that intersection north of, one block north of the complex, where the air had just gotten cleared, and then you notice these little fuzzballs around everyone's feet. That's what I started calling fuzzballs. And then pretty soon, you notice it's rising all by itself. People aren't kicking it up. The streets are starting to fume. So, by golly, they had to clean it, or people are going to start asking questions. You can't say it's molten metal, you know, a mile north of the complex. That would be too weird. So they're scrubbing the streets.
Could it be somebody would say that it was the pressure from the collapsed dust going down through the underground tunnels where the subways go, and that's why that fuming dust was pressurized and spreading out on those subways?
It was covering areas that were, you know, weren't where the subway was.
Oh.
The subway doesn't go under West Street, I don't believe.
Mm.
The West Side Highway or West Street is right over at the very edge of where the Hudson River used to be. And when they built the World Trade Center, they actually built it below the water table, because that's where the rock was. And they had to dig down about 70 feet to get bedrock.
Hmm.
And so they built up this wall and built this bathtub around the World Trade Center complex. Later, they put more fill in on the east side of that wall and began building the World Financial Center. But when they built the towers, it was just Hudson River there. So we're down below the Hudson River at the base of the towers. You should have flooding all through the everywhere if that bathtub had gotten a leak in it. But definitely over in the West Side Highway, you don't have any reason to have fumes coming up out of the, you know, out of the street. And it's uniformly over any place this dust had landed. And so I got to thinking, okay, what did they do with the lawns? If they can't scrub, you know, they scrub the streets, but what do you do with the lawn?
Right.
There's a lawn in front of the WFC buildings, and I went and looked at those pictures, and here you see fresh potting soil brought in and dumped right on top of the lawn. Kind of like what you do for a chemical spill.
Hmm.
And you bring in dirt. You know, people clean up oil spills with kitty litter.
That's right.
And then I started noticing these dirt trucks, pictures of dirt trucks coming into town, leaving town. And you start noticing the dirt gets deeper with time. A month later, the dirt's even deeper.
Hmm.
More dirt.
Hmm.
How much dirt should there be? Actually, it was 3 days after 9/11, the northern pedestrian walkway, it kind of got busted down. It's, you know, got dirt maybe several feet deep across the entire width of the thing. Obviously that dirt wasn't there when it was a pedestrian walkway.
Huh.
So what is all this dirt for?
Right.
And when I was there this past January, dirt was getting hauled in, getting hauled out, and the diggers would stir around the dirt before they scooped it up. And every once in a while, it looked like they hit a puffball. And poof, out would come all this white fuming.
Okay, so what is up with this fuming?
Well, we're just observing. We're not going to jump to conclusions. It's hard to resist.
Right.
Because, you know, we might lead ourselves astray if we're in too big of a hurry. But
yes.
Keep collecting this, you know, all these data points. Various aspects. Then we start noticing all this instant rust. Things instantly rusted, like steel would rust as though it had been in the bottom of the ocean for 100 years.
Hmm.
What's with that?
Right.
And I noticed on a government website they refer to the iron beams. No, they build structural buildings, they build with steel. Like, you know, A36 is a typical type of steel, not iron.
Right.
Because it's got better strength characteristics, and it also has better durability.
A higher temperature point or something, maybe.
Yeah, it can. It, not only that, but it's stronger, it's more resilient, it's more rust resistant. Lots of goodies about it. But we all know that if you put an iron skillet in the sink and you know, fill it with water, especially if it's clean. Oh, here, just to make sure, clean it with acetone so it has no oils in it. Put it with water in the sink, and it's bright orange within an hour.
Wow. Okay.
If you've left a iron fry pan in the sink overnight filled with water, you see orange rust in it the next morning.
Very true.
And now, the good thing about steel is it doesn't do that.
Very true. Okay.
Yeah, you get the steel pipes for plumbing and so forth.
Yes.
You might get some rust here and there, but they don't rust like that.
Right. Good. Continue.
Yeah, we see steel pipes left over from the towers, and they look like somebody sprayed orange spray paint uniformly over the surface, and they're just covered with rust.
Hmm.
Bizarre. Something, you know, like corroded them instantly. That is pretty weird. And then you notice some pieces of beams are withered away to almost nothing or less than that near the ground. But where'd the rest of the building go? We keep adding, you know, more questions to it. And all the windows I noticed, not all the windows, but many of the windows were blown out.
Mm-hmm.
No stab wounds in the adjacent building, like in the WFC2.
Right.
It didn't have any stab wounds, no projectiles that we could see.
Right.
But all of the marble around the doorway is gone.
Marble around the doorway is gone?
100% of it gone.
Whoa.
Oh, another interesting facet about the complex, there's big holes. You look from aerial view, the middle half of Building 6 is gone. It looks like a cookie cutter, you know, took out cylindrical cutouts out of the middle and just is gone.
Huh.
It's not in the bottom of the hole. There's a picture from inside the hole, and it's an 8-story building. You count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You're down at ground level. There's nothing there. And there's a hole over by Building 2 that goes down to the bottom, and you look way down there, and there's a guy walking through a puddle of water.
Hmm.
This is the basement of below Tower 2.
Okay.
And where's the material that was in that hole? This picture was taken on the 18th, and they couldn't have hauled stuff away in that amount of time. I mean, I'm talking about 100% gone, just as though a cookie cutter, you know, did a hole punch and sucked it out.
Okay, tell us, now, Building 6 again, you were saying that from eye view, that down the center of it, there is a hole that's been excavated?
Oh, not eye view, from a satellite view.
Satellite view.
From a sky view.
Yes.
Looking straight down, and they're very vertical. There were similar holes. Actually, at first, I got Building 3 and Building 6 confused because Building 3, between the two towers' destruction, it lost its middle, and then the second tower was destroyed, and the rest of the building disappeared. But they were vertical slices. And where's the material? It's like it's missing.
And that's Building 6, and it's World Trade Center 1 and 2 are the buildings that got hit. But here's this anomaly at Building 6.
Oh, and Building 3.
And Building 3. Wow.
Well, actually, you look at Building 5, and you got cylindrical holes in it.
So,
like a cookie cutter, you have punched out holes.
Right, so you're saying 6, 2, 3, and 5 all have these cookie cutter deep holes going down into.
Yep.
Whoa.
And then, wait a minute, where did Building 4 go? Except for the north wing, Building 4 disappeared. Except for this north wing that looks like it was sliced off with a X-Acto knife. And only the north wing is left, and nothing of the main body except for one little tiny part of the corner.
Well, yeah. People don't even talk about Building 4.
They don't get no respect.
Yeah, they talk about Building 7 a lot.
There's plenty of it. But what I first started saying then, it was, if it has a WTC prefix, it was destroyed.
Oh, wow. Interesting, isn't it?
Building 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
1 through 7. All were destroyed, the whole complex, but yet we're only looking at 1, 2, and 7 mostly.
Uh-huh. You know how magicians work. Hmm. They get you to look over here while they're doing the trick over there. So if you're focused on 1 and 2, you don't realize the whole complex was done in.
Wow.
If you look at these topo maps, and so forth, it's just flat right down to the ground like it was polished. And with a few wheat checks laying on top, but the north wing of Building 4, where it was sliced off, you could look in and see desks and stuff in there, just like it was cut off.
I have almost 11 anomalies that you have listed at this time. What other things came up for you as you were analyzing this? I mean, that's a lot, what we have now. What else?
Across the street from, I'm more or less trying to look at phenomena, and you start seeing similarities. But across the street from, of Liberty Street, from Tower 2,
right.
It was Bankers Trust, now called Deutsches Bank. I still call it Bankers Trust.
Right.
And it was known to have had no fires. It had this gash in the front, and there's one little pitiful wheat checks hanging in it. Well, the wheat checks that was hanging in it, a little section of three columns, three stories tall, those prefab sets, it wasn't bent. It didn't even look like it had a scratch on it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have, you know, cut up corners or bent corners.
Mm-hmm.
It was just hanging in that slot. What made that slot? And the slot's about 20 stories tall and, you know, pretty wide. And then there's this interesting picture inside a bank, from inside a Bankers Trust, looking out one of those holes, and it has this I-beam sticking out that's just shriveled up on the edge. It's as though somebody, if you get a human hair and hold it
right.
over a match,
right,
it just shrivels up. I don't know of any kind of force that can do that. And it's got holes in it, too. You can see daylight through the beam. And the rest of the beam is still white.
And you're talking about, when you're talking about this slot on the banker's trust, are you saying that it wasn't architecturally formed in it? You mean some kind of groove was just...
Oh, no, the building was flat across the front. It's a chunk of building that's missing that used to be there.
Wow.
It was there that morning, but it disappeared when Building 2 disappeared.
Interesting is that.
There's one picture I have of the North Tower taken from a chopper that's hanging over the WFC buildings.
Okay.
And it gets confusing, WFC, WTC.
Right.
Across from the Hudson side of that main street. If you look at it, you just see the north wall of the North Tower up to about the 8th floor, because Building 6 is 8 stories, so you can see it comes up to about the top of Building 6. But where is the west wall, the south wall, and the east wall? And where are the other 102 stories of wall? You just have 8 stories of outer wall of Building 1, of Tower 1, but you don't have the other 102 stories of that outer wall anywhere you can see. And you know, there's a hole that's like ground level at the base. A few pieces above ground level here and there, but not anything to account for a building. What I then looked at was what happens if you had a 110-story building go bang on the ground. Like, somebody talking about controlled demolition. Well, how they bust up buildings is they cut the supports and slam the building down to the ground with gravity.
Right.
Well, if a building landed with gravity, you look at the seismograph and you should have a pretty good size earthquake.
Yes, yes.
So let's go look at the seismograph data. It says that the North Tower made a 2.3 equivalent earthquake on the Richter scale, and the South Tower a 2.1. I lived in Seattle sometime, and I know that they blew up the King Dome to replace it.
Right.
It's much smaller, it's closer to the ground, and it's much less material. Why, if you take the centroid of the building and put all of its weight at the centroid and drop it, you know, what's the potential energy of it compared to one of the towers? One of the towers has 30 times, that's 30, 3 times 10, times the potential energy. So we should have 30 times the bang on the ground.
Right.
On the seismic scale, it's logarithmic. So instead of a 2.1, the South Tower, you know, just scaling it up, this is just rough estimates, scaling it up from what the King Dome was, it should be like a 3.5, 3.8, not a 2.1.
Oh, sure.
Just looking at the math and how far it had to drop.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, interesting.
So then I got to thinking, well, wait a minute. What would happen if you did have a 110-story building slamming down on the bedrock? Remember the bathtub that keeps the Hudson River out from the basement of the towers?
Yes.
Well, that would surely get busted up and damaged. And you would flood all of Manhattan. It would go up all the subway tunnels and, you know, they have this PATH train that goes under the Hudson. It's been there since the early 1900s. And it comes up onto the base, the bottom of the bathtub. And would you know that that thing didn't spring a leak?
All that force coming down on it by the pancake effect of...
If it did, you would... Oh, as for the pancake effect. Okay, we saw this pulverization. If it was pulverized because one floor hit another one...
Right.
It has to... The floor that it hits has to be rigid in order to shatter the floor above. It can't be act like a shock absorber. It has to be rigid. So if the floor hits it and turns to powder, then the next one drops and hits it and turns to powder and so forth on down. If this kind of impact shatters floors, why didn't it shatter the basement?
Sure.
The basement's holding the rest of the building.
Right.
And then the basement was damaged. The first rescuers went down there and says, anybody down there, there? And you hear this big echo ringing through the place. And you had, my favorite thing is, you know, Roadrunner survived this building landing on him. There's a Warner Brothers store that has these life-size characters of Roadrunner, Foghorn Leghorn,
yeah.
I think Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
And they weren't damaged.
On the first floor?
First basement level, right underneath ground level. In the mall.
In the mall. Let me just do this quick break here and remind folks, you are listening to Dr. Judy Wood. Her website, drjudywood.com. Background. Are you still there?
Yep.
Okay, good. She, up to 2006, was an assistant professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, has a background in civil engineering, physics, mechanical science, and she is taking her mind and looking at what happened to the buildings. And just, you know, now, once again, she is just rocking the world by saying it wasn't just building 1 and 2 and 7, but the whole Wall Street complex was affected. And so when we get back, we're going to go over some of the anomalies that she sees that happened with September 11th, and then come down to what she thinks caused it. And that's where we're going to get. It's going to get interesting. Of course, time is absolutely flying, but she'll be back, so don't worry. This is KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We'll be back. Radio Alchemy here. My name is Eben. I hope you guys stay.
Where the past and the future converge. Go to www.radioalchemy.com. RadioAlchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
All right, loves, and remember to go to kpfk.org. There you'll find lots of great materials and great programmers there to help you know about what it is that the man behind the curtain is trying to pull, what kind of show he's trying to distract you with. And boy, are we getting a very interesting perspective on September 11th with Dr. Judy Wood. We're going to be back with her in just a second. Go to www.drjudywood.com and check out the goodies. All right. All right, Dr. Judy Wood is on the line. She's an assistant professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University up until 2006. Background in physics and civil engineering and mechanical sciences. The point is that she knows what she is talking about, and she has been in contact with the National Institute of Standards and Technology about some of her findings about this precipitous drop of these amazing structures, these works of art, in New York on September 11th, and has gone ahead and filed a request for correction. I understand that has not been corrected just yet, but let me go through just the quick list. That's a pretty long one. I know there's more, but time's fine, and we want to get to what her explanation for this is. One thing that we have heard about, of course, is the heat, the idea of the fuel from the aircraft burnt these buildings down. She's saying that there was no heat, that there were these interesting fume balls, these dust balls that were coming up miles away from the center. Trucks coming in, dirt trucks taking dirt out, bringing dirt in so quickly. What was that plan all about? Steel that's rusty, that there was no molten steel, that the steel after a short time was covered with rust, that some of the beams were withered. There are places where windows were blown outward, but yet there wasn't a projectile to show what was, the impetus for what broke those windows out. 100% of the marble around the doorways disappeared. That the whole complex, buildings 1 through 7, were grossly affected. That there were these strange, very deep cookie cutter, gigantic holes that were stamped down into the plots where these buildings existed. And Bankers Trust that sat close to, I think it was Building 2, that it had a flat surface, and all of a sudden it had this slot, like somebody took some kind of device for, you know, shaping or digging into something and just took a huge swatch of the building right out of the face. I knew that there was much more, but Dr. Wood, what does this add up for you to be?
Oh, there's something else that we've overlooked. The cars, and there's toasted cars, but some cars that weren't toasted were parked in an odd arrangement. They're parked upside down.
What?
I think everyone can get their arms around that. They know which way cars are normally oriented.
Yes.
These cars that park just like the one behind me, except it's upside down. And then I started noticing that there were trees right next to the car that were fully covered with leaves. So how come that car is parked upside down?
And what about the toasting? I was looking at your example of a postal truck, and it is completely seared, but there's a postal truck that's in pristine condition right behind it.
Right. And there's, I don't know which picture you're looking at, but you might notice a fuzzy blob kind of around the back end of it.
Yes.
That's what I call a fuzzy blob. They seem to, seems to be the result of something eroding or, you know, deteriorating and attacking the metal. And on the left side of that postal truck, you see a lot of places. It's hard to really tell. But that doesn't look like a fuzzy fuzzball. I call it a fuzzy blob. And there are other pictures where there are fuzzy blobs that it looks like somebody walked into it and then the person keeled over. But the upside-down cars are pretty extraordinary. I started reading some of the first responder testimonies, and they talked about feeling like there was a force that lifted them up. Quite a few of them had said this. And there was one in particular who was over by this, going into the Millennium building, the Millennium Hotel. And so I went and looked at pictures around there. There are no stab wounds outside the building, but right next to it there's a police car that's upside down.
Wow.
And there's holes in the building that were round. It looks like a glass facade. It looks like a huge soldering iron just melted holes in the building, and they're white, and there's stuff pouring out, just fuming coming out of the building. Then a few days later, they tore all the facade off, as you couldn't tell, you couldn't see these weird holes. But that was another phenomenon. But what really things really started coming together is, you know, all this talk about molten metal, and no, you can't have that because you have steam explosions. That's what happened at Chernobyl. It was water and heat, and water expands by volume 1,600 times. That's 1,600 times in volume when it becomes steam.
Okay. Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, now that's on my mind, and I'm looking at this picture of Tower 2, and the building suddenly looks like it turned into steam.
Hmm.
The solids looks like it turned into the equivalent of steam.
Yes.
Suddenly everything starts expanding, so I'm thinking, okay, all the molecules which normally are, you know, connected together, they're attracted to each other. What happens if they suddenly repel each other for some reason?
Hmm.
That might be what we would see. Back looking again at the ground and the dust coming up, and remember, I was pretty convinced you had this coarse dust that settled out of the air fairly quickly, and then you have fine dust rising up. That told me that the coarse dust has to be breaking down further and further and further. So what would cause a material to keep separating into smaller parts? It isn't holding together. It's repelling itself, kind of.
Right.
And, so I start doing some searches on that, and I come up with something that I had looked at a year earlier, and I put it aside because I was so busy looking at the evidence, and that was the Hutchison effect.
Hmm.
Now, that's something that this person, John Hutchison, has done on his own, just, you know, as a hobby kind of, but he doesn't work for the government or anything like that. Matter of fact, the government was very interested in what he was doing in the early 80s and went to his lab and videotaped him for 4 months. But, you know, he just does, good things with it.
Yes.
And it is all about using it for positive reasons. And for that matter, something horrendous that happened on 9/11, it's so bizarre. We should be able to study it, figure out what happened so we can use it for good purposes.
That's right.
And not bad things, like free energy. If there's this kind of energy that can be unleashed from the material that was on the site, well, we don't need to worry about gas prices.
Well, yeah. But you know what, dear? We have around 5 minutes left. We're obviously going to have to bring you back, but I want you at least to come to your revelation about what could cause all of these things.
Okay. What John Hutchison uses is he works with field effects, various forms of radio frequency, waves, electrostatic, and so forth. When I was looking at this breaking down of the fumes, I wanted to get a better picture. So I looked up some satellite images. And I wanted to better say, what the heck is that? I discovered this huge hurricane the size of Katrina right outside of New York City on 9/11. And then I looked at what the path of it was. It was Hurricane Aaron. It made a straight line to New York City, was there the morning of 9/11. It was about the closest around 8 a.m. or so, plus or minus an hour, and you know, it was in the neighborhood, and it kind of basically came to a stop for maybe 12 hours before that, 12 hours after that, and then it made a U-turn and headed straight east without the sea and up north. And when it was stopped there, it had spun out, it had gotten bigger, like a figure skater putting its arms out.
Yes.
It slowed down a little bit and expanded in size, and then the next day packed up and moved out. Yeah, it's like it reported for work. So what's this all about? And then I got to realizing, wait, we all feel a storm coming. You sense a storm coming. You feel it. Why do you feel it? You feel the field effects from it. So having a hurricane there, and that at that distance, you would have field effects from that hurricane.
And did people feel the field effects of a huge hurricane off the coast?
People feel, you know, when a storm's coming, but the storm goes away, they quit feeling, they don't worry about it. There's other things that people got to thinking about that
yes,
day.
Yes, yes.
But why weren't we told about this hurricane aiming straight for New York City? How did they know the hurricane was going to stop and turn around and leave? And if it stopped outside of New York City for any length of time, you're going to have storm surges. And Manhattan is only 20 feet above sea level or so. I think it's 20 feet. I haven't checked the exact number lately. But aren't you going to worry about flooding? So why didn't it, you know, that morning's weather report, they showed that part of the ocean, but they don't show a hurricane.
But yet on the satellite image, there it is.
Yes.
And did the National Weather Service also talk? Named it.
Yeah, it was mentioned, but it was never brought up to, you know, in front of people. It was never mentioned. It was kind of like off in the background. If they hid it more than that, it would be really obvious that they were hiding it. They had the space station fly over New York on 9/11, and they have a video that Frank Culberson filmed from there. And he zoomed in on New York, who had to hold the camera very carefully to avoid getting that hurricane in the picture. Do you realize it was raining on Long Island on 9/11? We remember the pretty sky.
Right, yes.
That was the Outer Bands.
Wow.
Cape Cod got rained. There was thunder reported at JFK Airport and at Newark Airport on 9/11.
You know what, Doctor? You know what? Just obviously, this should have been a two-hour interview because we are coming up to you putting these puzzle pieces together to tell us what you see in the evidence of September 11th, which is so much, and yet we have a cliffhanger here. We have a cliffhanger for the audience here. And so I am hoping maybe will you come back and I arrange something and you'll come back next week and we will continue this discussion?
Sure. I'd love to. I'd be honored to.
Yes. Absolutely, because obviously so much information, and there's so much to talk with you about this. So obviously we're going to have to put the big tease on the audience tonight. Speaking with Dr. Judy Wood, we are out of time here on Radio Alchemy, and obviously it's just that there is so much to do. She has her own scientific analysis of September 11th, what happened not only to buildings 1 and 2, but to the whole complex. That is startling and pertains to something so much more dynamic, so much more revolutionary, and so much more black budget than anybody has previously proposed. And so she's going to come back next week. We're going to arrange that. We're going to continue with this discussion. Meanwhile, go to our website, www.drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. Lots of great information. Check out that molten station. Check out the charred cars and all of that stuff. Very amazing goodies. Doctor, thank you so much. We will continue this discussion. And I just want to thank you for your perseverance and doing what you're doing, because it seems like, you don't get the accolades from the general public because maybe they don't want to hear about it. And then even the 911 community can sometimes say, put their fingers in their ears. And so it really takes somebody of great heart, quite a patriot, to continue with your fight to get the truth out there. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, darlings. So until next week, don't worry. We're going to continue this saga. So stay tuned. We'll see you.
You've been listening to Radio Alchemy with your host, Evan Ray. Be sure to visit our website, www.radioalchemy.com, and join us next week for more mind-blowing revelations from the fringe.